Welcome to the Motherhood Unfiltered podcast. We are a group of moms striving to bring balance to motherhood with lots of laughs and some tears along the way. We seek to walk alongside you in this journey as we learn and grow from one another. Hello, friends. It's Brianna, and on this episode, we will be talking about infertility. Did you know that 1 in 8 couples experience infertility and another 10% of women experience secondary infertility? This is something that was definitely new to me, and today we have my fellow collaborator, Justine, joining us.
Hello, everybody. I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to share a little bit of our story.
Justine and I have been friends for a few years. We met at work and started our motherhood journey at the same time. So I'm very excited to talk about this because from a friend's perspective, it really helped me and opened my eyes a lot. So Justine, why don't you go ahead and tell us your story?
Yes. So we started our motherhood journey at the same time. It just looked a little different for each of us. Starting at the beginning, Jordan and I got married at 22 and 23, and we, at that point, were in no rush to start our family. We had so many goals that we wanted to accomplish before then, which mostly involved being financially stable.
Right.
Many of us, you know, there's no perfect time to start your family, but for us, being financially stable with a career and a place to call home was a top priority.
Absolutely. And we have similar personalities, so I know exactly what that's like to want to have everything in order.
Yes, totally. And as you know, we started checking these goals off of our list, my dream of becoming a mother just continued to grow. I always knew that I wanted to be a mother, but it was more than that. I felt like I was meant to be a mother. And there were times that I've even have caught myself looking past motherhood into grandparenthood, which people think is like so weird. But I just have such sweet memories of my grandparents. They invested so much time into us. And I just love that whole picture of family and this notion that you always have these people that you can lean on in your life. So during the early stages of our marriage, we talked a lot about family. We knew that we wanted to have children. It was just a matter of when and what that would look like for us. So when we finally arrived at this point where we felt like we were ready, those goals were getting checked off of our list. We had been married for about 6 to 7 years. And I remember being so nervous to take such a huge step, but also so excited.
Right.
Unfortunately, that initial excitement wore off after only a couple of months. I personally had always thought that if we ever pursued having a biological child, I thought it would be fairly easy to get pregnant. My mom had told me that she was a fertile myrtle, and other than seeing my favorite character, Charlotte, from Sex and the City and her infertility struggles, I never really considered that that would be an alternative for me.
I think the first thing a lot of women do whenever trying to get pregnant is set up an appointment with their OBGYN. So what steps did you take with the guidance of your OBG?
So before I go down this road, I just want to include a disclaimer that I am not a medical professional. I'm going to attempt to use medical terminology to the best of my ability. And based on my understanding of what I was told from our doctors, and my husband is also in support of me sharing our personal struggles. Together, we both hope that our experience can help someone else who might be experiencing the same thing.
Right.
So after we initially started trying, about 4 months in, I wasn't having a regular menstrual cycle. And this wasn't abnormal to me. I had grown up not having a normal one either. Very irregular and could go, you know, months without having one. So to remedy this, my OB put me on progesterone to help me regulate my cycle. So I started taking that and it did exactly what it was supposed to do. It completely regulated me and I knew, you know, to the day when I would start my cycle. But then after 6 months, my doctor recommended that Jordan have a semen analysis just to make sure that everything was good on his end as well. And so he did that through our primary care physician and that doctor had told Jordan that his results had come back normal. But something that we didn't know at that time was that roughly 40% of couples that are struggling to conceive are attributed to male infertility. Right. So that was some new information for us. So after the progesterone and after Jordan's test, about 8 months in, I started taking Clomid to support ovulation. So I had started having that regular menstrual cycle from the progesterone, and I was buying the ovulation strips, and I was also actually taking my temperature. That's like a, you know, old wives' tale. And those ovulation strips, though, those babies are expensive.
Right, right.
So every morning I'd use one of the strips to determine if I was ovulating, and that darn flashing smile would just never pop up. It was just the most deflating feeling every day.
And that's crazy that you say that, because at least for me, you would think that if you are having a regular menstrual cycle, that you would be ovulating regularly, but that's not the case, correct?
Yeah. And that's what I thought too. I didn't understand what was happening and why I wasn't ovulating. Supposedly, most women ovulate for 24 to 48 hours each month. And I was taking those strips every single day, and I would never be positive for ovulation. So in the small circle of friends and family that knew what we were experiencing, I had had a couple friends tell me that as soon as they started Clomid, they were quickly pregnant soon after. But again, unfortunately, that was not the case for us.
Right.
So then we fast forward into 13 months, so just over a year of trying, and my doctor recommended I have a hysteriosalpingogram. So that is a procedure that uses an x-ray to look at your fallopian tubes and your uterus by injecting dye into your womb, which should flow into the fallopian tubes. Mm-hmm. And this was such an uncomfortable experience. I don't even like having a yearly exam. And that's just one person in the room. But with this, there were multiple people in the room. And they actually had, I think it was like a medical student or something, like, oh, can they observe this? I'm thinking like, what's one more person? Right. Sure, why not? But so after going over those results with my doctor and seeing my x-rays, there was no blockage and everything looked normal. So although that was good news, it just left us with more questions, wondering what could possibly be going on if I'm getting positive results with all the steps that I'm taking. So then the following month, my doctor told me that I needed to see a fertility specialist. And to me, it felt like he was giving up. And I know that wasn't the case, but that's just what it felt like to me during the time. And hearing him say just those words, fertility specialist, took me a couple months to process. I had already known at the time that I wasn't willing to do IVF. And to me, that's what a fertility clinic represented. So he referred us to a variety of clinics, and I just needed time to process the feelings before we could even schedule an appointment. So even though I already had this notion that, you know, I'm not willing to do IVF or other avenues that involved extensive intervention from fertility doctors, I still wanted the answers.
So how long was that gap from your doctor telling you to see a fertility specialist to you actually scheduling an appointment?
It took me about 3 months to wrap my head around going to a clinic. We ended up scheduling the appointment at the end of May, which is, as for me as a teacher, is like the craziest time of the school year. But at that point, we had been trying for 17 months, so we just made the appointment, and we stayed at my sister's house the night before, and I just remember even like the drive up there and that night, my nerves had just kept me up all night long. And, you know, both myself and Jordan, we were mentally preparing to go to this appointment, assuming that there was something wrong with me in the case of not being able to conceive. And so, you know, we made that assumption, and so did the clinic, because they scheduled us to see a female fertility specialist. So the clinic asked us to bring all of our medical records from the past 2 years so that they knew the steps we had already taken throughout this process. And so when we got there, we met the female fertility specialist, and she started off with a vaginal ultrasound, which was, again, very uncomfortable. Right. But we did get good results. So I knew right away that I had a healthy amount of eggs. And so that was a relief to hear. So following that, we followed her back into her office to talk about ovulation, since I had been telling her that ovulation was an issue and I had been taking Clomid. And so she had mentioned that she could help with that, and there were some other avenues to try other than the Clomid. So once we were back in her office, she started to look through our medical records, going through both mine and Jordan's folders. And when she got through looking at Jordan's folder, her body language changed. She closed the folder, she sat back, looked at Jordan, and asked him to tell her about his journey. And so he did. It wasn't much to tell. It was just kind of like, yeah, I was 6 months into trying, I had this test done and my doctor told me I was fine.
Right.
And she said, you know, Jordan, I'm really sorry that I have to be the one to tell you this, but you were not given accurate information. Wow. She then proceeded to say, I'm looking at the results of your analysis, and this shows that you are actually infertile.
Which I'm sure was such a shock for both of you.
Yes, I did not even know how to react. All I knew was that I was aching from seeing the hurt and pain on Jordan's face. And she had said, you know, there was no point for me to continue seeing her to talk about ovulation until Jordan saw a male fertility specialist. So the rest of the meeting with her was such a blur. And I'm not even sure that Jordan and I spoke in the car on the way home, because it was just such a shock. And we Right. needed time for that Right. news to sink in and, Mm-hmm. and be able to process all of that. But once we were finally home that evening, we talked about Jordan seeing the male fertility specialist, and we were actually able to get him an appointment the following day. So we got back to the clinic, and the male fertility doctor was so warm and comforting. He was such a kind man, and he could see the uncertainty and the pain on our face, and it was Right. just really calming to be in his office. And so Jordan just kind of told him, you know, he was still in a state of shock and couldn't believe that, you know, things had come to this, and that he was told over a year ago that his analysis report showed that he was fine. And so I can totally take on that part of that is on us. This whole experience was such a huge lesson that we need to ask questions. Right. We should not just take a doctor's word for it. We need to get a second opinion. We need to ask for a copy of every test we Right. have done. You know, we need to keep track of our own medical records, because I am embarrassed to say that we did not have a copy of Jordan's report until the fertility clinic asked us to obtain one.
Wow.
So if we could go back, we would obviously have asked, you know, for a copy of that. But anyways, after Jordan explained to him what had happened, the doctor had said, you know, I wish that I could tell you this has only happened to you, but you would be amazed at how many primary care doctors do not know how to read that type of report.
That's so crazy, because normally you just take your doctor's word for it.
Yes, it was so crazy. And I'm not on here to bash doctors, but this was such a huge takeaway for us. Doctors are humans too, and they make mistakes. And so as the patient, we cannot just take their word for it. We have to advocate for ourselves and get a second opinion.
Right.
So after this conversation with him, he repeated the semen analysis that day, and we were able to view the results immediately in his office. He had a microscope that was set up to project on the TV in there, and those results only confirmed that Jordan was, in fact, infertile. And so it was a very scientific but also eye-opening experience to see it for ourselves.
Right.
So what the doctor had told us at this point, we had been trying for 18 months, that he could do a procedure on Jordan called a vasoepididymostomy. So I know, very big
words. A lot of big words.
Yes. So this is the microsurgical procedure for treatment of epididymal obstruction. And so some people refer to this as a vasectomy reversal. So you're basically checking for blockage in the male reproductive system. So, you know, we talked about it and we decided to move forward with the surgery. And so we were able to schedule it for a month following that initial appointment. And so at the time of making this appointment, Jordan's fertility doctor had told us that sometimes when they do this surgery, they can find viable sperm behind a blockage. But if this is the case, that sperm can only be used for IVF. And so we had to tell him prior to surgery, if they ended up finding sperm behind a blockage, if we would want them to extract it, freeze it, and then use it for IVF. But as I mentioned earlier, we already knew we weren't going to pursue IVF. And so that wasn't a huge discussion for us.
Right.
But I mean, he also did tell us that if a blockage was found and was successfully unblocked, then it was possible that within 3 months to a year, sperm could naturally flow through the male reproductive system and natural conception would be possible. And so that was the reason why we went through with the surgery. The surgery lasted a couple of hours. Jordan's doctor reported to us that it went well. He found blockages on both sides and he was able to unblock them. And he also had found sperm behind the blockage. But we had told him we would not be pursuing IVF, and so it was not extracted.
Right.
We wouldn't know if the surgery was successful for, again, 3 months to a year post-surgery. And the reason for that is scar tissue could potentially build up and then block it all over again. And so you have to wait that time period for the body to heal to know if it's going to take to the surgery, I guess is how you could explain it. So Jordan's doctor told us that we could come back in 3 months and we could come back as many times as we would like after that 3 months for him to repeat the analysis and see if the surgery was successful. He told us he leaves it up to each couple to decide how many times, you know, how often they want to come back. But he also told us that some couples choose to never come back after surgery.
Wow.
And initially, I just remember thinking, that is so weird. You know, why would you go through all of that? And why would you go through a surgery if you're not even going to go find out if it worked?
Right.
But it turns out that we are one of those couples. So we are coming up on 2 years since Jordan's surgery, and we have still not returned to the clinic. And the reason for that is with the completion of that surgery, it just brought such a sense of peace. And it was almost as if that door had closed and our hearts were ready to move forward.
Kind of like whatever happens, happens.
Exactly. So we just moved forward after that. That was the end of taking progesterone, Clomid, the end of appointments, no more ovulation strips, tracking my cycle, no more taking my temperature. It had just all become too much, and that overwhelming peace just washed over us.
I can only imagine the stress and remember the stress that it was putting on you. For those of you that are listening, I've been friends with Justine through a lot, if not all, of her and Jordan's journey. Justine's a teacher, and I worked in the front office of our school, and I remember Justine, you always coming in to visit me on breaks and update me on your progress. I truly can't imagine after taking step after step, the stress it put on you and Jordan and the challenges you both faced. But what were some of the main challenges for you both during this time?
I think one of the greatest challenges that caused me to have a lot of guilt was having family and friends that were becoming mothers, whether for the first, second, or third time. And it wasn't even necessarily getting pregnant that was the hard part. It was just this birth of life. I wanted to be a mother so bad, no matter how motherhood came to me. And so having so many friends and families bringing babies into this world was such a tough pill for me to swallow. I obviously had such immense joy and happiness for them. I wanted to be there to support them and to let them know how happy I was for them. But inside, I just felt so much pain for myself. And then feeling that way for myself made me feel selfish for feeling that way, which then turned into me feeling guilty and shameful. Right. And so it just started reiterating all these negative feelings. And it was really hard to balance all of those feelings. I remember I would go home and reflect on if I was supportive enough that day to my pregnant friend or family member. Did I smile enough at them? Did I ask enough questions about their journey? And so at that point, I was just spiraling.
I would love to take a moment to just share from a friend's point of view, kind of coming from the opposite side. You said you were so conflicted and would go back and forth asking yourself all of these different questions. And mm-hmm. I was actually one of the first of my friends to get pregnant, but you were the first of my friends to have experienced infertility, or anyone that I knew to have experienced infertility. But I remember coming back from summer break and we were in your classroom telling each other about our updates, like always, because my husband and I had been trying, which you knew about. Mm-hmm. And I told you I was going to go home that night and take a pregnancy test. And in all honesty, I fully expected it to say I wasn't pregnant. I really did think that it would take up to a year for us. So I went home and found out I was pregnant. And I remember the next day you said, hey, like, well, you know, did you take a test? And I hate to admit this, but I totally lied and was like, no, I didn't take a test. Because for me, though, it was like, how do you tell one of your dearest friends who's having such a hard time? Yep, got pregnant on the first try. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to be so sensitive as your friend because it is a real struggle and not something to be blown off. Someone told me once, well, people who can't get pregnant just need to stop stressing about it because once they do, they'll get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And it's just simply not true. But there are people that blow it off like that. And I didn't want to seem like one of them. So mm-hmm. I guess my advice to any listener who knows someone who is struggling with infertility is to be sensitive. Your first instinct may be to pull away, because I know that was mine. I felt like I couldn't talk about my pregnancy, or when I had my son, I felt like I couldn't talk about my son. But at the same time, you have to realize that they are still your friend and you still need them just as much as they need you.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's great advice, because you want to make sure that as the mom to be, you're still allowing yourself to feel that joy that you're allowed to feel. And having that balance and sensitivity, though, is really important too, because you are so right. At the end of the day, your friends or your family, and I totally get that that instinct would be to pull away, but the reality is that it's just a season in life of struggle. And while I was going through all of this, one of my really good friends was pregnant and becoming a mother for the first time. We were best friends in high school. We lived in the same college town and we're still great friends today. And her friendship just means the world to me. And I remember that she had texted me one night in what I would personally consider to be late, but in reality it was probably only about 8:30. As a teacher, I go to bed quite early.
Right.
And she said something along the lines of, you know, she was really nervous to talk to me, but she wanted to share with me that she was pregnant and she didn't want to cause me any pain. So she wanted me to hear it from her before I would hear it from somebody else or before I would see it on social media. And I didn't see that message until the following morning because I was sleeping.
Right.
I felt so guilty. I was just so sad that my friend was scared to tell me something that was really exciting and something that I wanted her to feel happy about. But then I started feeling worse because it had taken me so long to even see her message. So I thought, you know, she's probably thinking that I'm ignoring her or, you know, that I'm upset or something, when in reality, I was just sleeping. So I was finally able to text her back and let her know I was sleeping and that I was so overjoyed for her and her husband. And so to compensate for me feeling so guilty that she was scared to tell me, I sent her flowers that day to let her know that I really was happy for her and that she can talk to me about becoming a mother. I wanted her to truly know that even though I was experiencing a really hard season in my own journey to motherhood, I could still be happy for her and acknowledge the love and joy that she was experiencing.
Right. And as a friend, I can say that you always did such a great job with that. I mean, you planned my work baby shower, which I knew wasn't easy, you know, even though you never even expressed that. And to this day, I'm still so, so grateful. What advice would you give to other couples experiencing infertility?
Yeah, it makes me so sad that there are so many other couples out there that experience infertility and some of their marriages don't survive it. When you experience infertility, you really have to lean into each other and rely on each other because it's no one's fault. You're not letting each other down and right. you need to get through it together. Right. And you can do that by communicating how each of you are feeling because that is so important. You know, your friends and family can sympathize with you, but sometimes that just makes you feel worse. And your right. spouse is the one that truly understands the struggle. They're that person that understands your pain when it feels like everyone else around you is becoming a mom while you wait on the sidelines. Right. And they're that person that will look you judgment-free in the eye when you cry at the latest announcement on social media. Again, judgment-free.
Right.
And at the end of the day, it's the two of you and you're in this together. And I'm not saying this is something that's easy because it's certainly not easy. For the right. longest time, you know, Jordan and I had thought that the infertility was solely on my side. And so I would have feelings that I was letting him down. But after we found out about Jordan's infertility, it was like the roles had reversed. He felt inadequate, like he was right. letting me down. And so we really just had to be there for each other. And it was hard. It's not easy. But you have to realize that no matter who that infertility is coming from, you're still in it together. And there are so many beautiful ways to have a family, and having one biologically is just one way.
You briefly touched on friends and family supporting you. I'm really glad that this is something we're talking about because maybe friends and family simply don't know how to lend that support. So how do you feel families can support their relative or relatives that are experiencing infertility?
Yeah, this is so important. And that's if you choose to share these intimate details with your family. Personally, my family is really close to me. And so my siblings and parents were aware of our struggles. And then I also had a few select friends that I really trusted and let them in as well. But when people say things like, don't stress, that is such a dismissive thing to say.
Right.
Because you're an outsider who is not in it. And for someone to be trying to start a family and it's not coming easy to them, you feel like you're being dismissed.
Right.
And to the person that is experiencing the infertility, it is all consuming. Becoming a parent is all you think about. You imagine having your little babe run down the hallway and jump onto your bed for some early morning snuggles. You imagine what the holidays would be like with them. You imagine what camping would look like with your family reunion.
Right.
You imagine what their face is going to look like the first time you take them to Disneyland. And when becoming a mother just isn't happening, it deeply hurts to feel dismissed and it only makes you feel worse. But on the other side of that, it's also not helpful to ignore the hurt and act like nothing is going on.
Right.
You know, some people are just so uncomfortable seeing other people in pain. And so they'd rather just sweep it under the rug than address the hurt. And that's not helpful, nor is that a healthy coping skill. It makes you feel like you can't open up or trust that person with your emotions because they're just going to let you down every single time. And so sometimes the best thing you can do to support that family member or friend is to simply acknowledge the hurt and pain they're feeling. You don't even have to say anything other than this really sucks and just allow them to feel the emotions they're feeling.
I remember you telling me that during one of our talks, the same thing. I just want someone to tell me that this sucks, but that they're here for me at the same time.
Yes. Acknowledging that hurt can be so powerful.
Another question that I have for you and that I am extremely passionate about as well is, how do you handle people that would ask if you and Jordan ever plan to start a family?
Jordan and I are going on 10 years of marriage in July. So we actually got this question all the time. And it's really just not an appropriate question to ask at all. I think that people need to understand that it is so private and you have no idea what couples might be experiencing. And so it's really none of your business to ask if they want to have a baby or if they want to have children. And since we have personally experienced infertility, we are so aware of the inappropriateness of this question, so we don't ask it. At the end of the day, it's none of our business, and we need to respect that some things just need to stay between a marriage.
Exactly. I 100% agree that it is such an inappropriate question, even to ask someone who already has a child or children. Just because they could birth one child doesn't always mean they can birth a second or a third. And there could be so many factors that that person does not want to talk about and shouldn't have to mm-hmm. if they don't choose to.
Yes.
I do have one more question for you. I could only imagine that going public with something so personal is extremely difficult, but what are some positive outcomes that you and Jordan experienced by going public with your infertility struggles?
I wish I could say that I let people in really early into our struggles, but that just wasn't the case. We waited a long time to go public with this information. And by public, I mean posted on social media. We mailed letters to all of our family and friends. And our reason for doing that is that we were ready to let in everyone
right.
and share with them on this chapter that was closing and a beautiful one that was opening. And we had made the decision to pursue adoption. I was so overjoyed to announce this decision and move forward with open hearts as we embarked on yet another chapter of our parenthood journey. So when I talked about that overwhelming peace at the end of the fertility clinic, I felt that same sense of peace when we announced our plans to pursue growing our family through adoption. But even though I was so excited to announce this, I was very anxious about how people would react when they heard about the pain we had experienced. I was worried that people would see me as weak or that they would judge me right. or say I was really weird for like putting all this personal information out there.
Right.
But I knew at the end that that was just the enemy taking advantage of my vulnerability.
Right.
And at one point I had gone back and read through a journal that I had kept during our infertility struggles. And I had forgotten what a dark headspace I was in. It made me feel so sad to read the words that I had written at the time. But that is how powerful infertility is. Once we did finally go public, I had a completely different response than what I was anticipating. It was beautiful. We were getting phone calls, text messages, and DMs on social media. Some of these people I knew, while other people I didn't know. Some I had just known for a little while others I had known since I was a kid. And they started opening up to me and telling me how they were going through some of the same struggles that we were. And a couple of them even asked me to meet up with them because they just wanted someone to talk to that was experiencing the same feelings or had experienced them. So I ended up meeting with a couple of them individually so that we could share our stories together judgment-free. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was such a healing experience to know that someone else is out there knowing exactly how you're feeling.
Right.
And so my advice to people out there experiencing infertility is that I understand the need to keep things private because it is intimate and it is painful. But the chances are that you know a handful of people in your life that are experiencing or have experienced the exact same thing. Because 1 in 8, I mean, that's a pretty significant
right.
statistic. And it's so powerful when you have a person in your life that you're able to share those feelings with. And that is not something that I was expecting when I first put our story out there.
Well, thank you so much for opening up and letting us in on your infertility journey.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to share our story.
And thank all of you for sitting in this space with us as we navigate a topic that is so common yet very seldom spoke of. And if you struggle or have struggled with infertility, we would love to hear from you, even if it's just messaging Justine back and forth, sometimes, like she said, it's just so nice to have someone that knows exactly what you're going through. And we just wanted to let you know that you are definitely not alone.
Thank you so much for tuning in with us. If you haven't already, we want to welcome you to connect with us on Instagram @_motherhoodunfiltered. Thanks again for joining us.